Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Open Systems Publishing eCast, Advanced TCA, The Rollout Begins. My name is Joe Pavlot. I'll be hosting this event today, representing the speakers and handling questions at the end. It's been just about 4 years since the Advanced TCA specification was ratified, and of course, the ink was barely dry when the analysts wanted to know where the $1 billion worth of business was. And it always takes a number of years for any of these open standards, particularly one as large and significant as Advanced TCA, to catch hold. And I think in that 4 years, we've seen an enormous amount of progress, both in terms of the number of products in the market to the adoption rate that's ramping up quite seriously this year. I think one thing that's always true about new technologies is people tend to overestimate the rate of adoption in the near term. And the flip side of that is they underestimate the rate of adoption in the long term, and that certainly seems to be the case for Advanced TCA. So before I introduce today's presenters, just a little bit of housekeeping. We're going to go through the presentations and then have a Q&A at the end. You've got a little button on the left side of your screen to present a question, so go ahead and if you've got a question, just type it in, and we'll kind of go through them in order at the end of the talks. If we run short on time or we've got too many questions, I'll try to do some triage and deal with the ones that are the most important. So we've got three speakers today. First, Devashis Paul from Tundra is going to talk about Advanced TCA and Micro TCA wireless base stations using Serial Rapid I.O. We've heard a lot about Ethernet in previous ECASTs, but we're going to get some more information today on Serial Rapid I.O. Second speaker, Matt Hoover from Embedded Planet, is going to talk about using AMC modules for gigabit Ethernet connectivity and Rapid I.O. for DSP functionality, so a little more Rapid I.O. information there. And last but not least, Howard Glassman from GE Fanuc Embedded Systems is going to talk about building modular computer systems with Advanced TCA using AMC modules. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dev Paul from Tundra, who's going to tell us about wireless base stations and Serial Rapid I.O. Dev?
Thank you, Joe. I'd like to thank the audience for joining us today for this eCast. And as Joe mentioned, we'll be talking about how Serial Rapid I.O. is used for wireless base stations. So in today's presentation, I'll give you a quick overview of Tundra Semiconductor, provide some framework for Rapid I.O., and show how that fits into ATCA and Micro TCA systems. Then we'll get into some wireless architectures and specifically application examples for WiMAX. And then finally, we'll close it off with examples of what's available in the ecosystem with respect to Rapid I.O. AMCs that can service wireless. Tundra Semiconductor is a publicly traded company focusing on system interconnect semiconductor products, specifically Rapid I.O., PCI, and PCI Express-oriented products. In addition to that, we have a design services division, and we offer IP. We're headquartered in Ottawa, Canada, with revenues of $85.3 million. And as you can see, we have a global customer base of all the Tier 1 networking OEMs. Where's Rapid I.O. used? This gives you an overview of the various standards that are available to you to design systems. Rapid I.O. is essentially used for chip-to-chip, board-to-board, and chassis-to-chassis interconnect. It's really coming from the embedded space and is optimized to send packets between components in networking equipment and other embedded systems. With respect to the ecosystem of semiconductors for Rapid I.O., as each month goes by, it seems like there's an announcement for a new set of products from the various vendors in the semiconductor industry. Today we have FPGAs from Xilinx, Altera, and Lattice all supporting Serial Rapid I.O. And this is a big thing for the ecosystem because it provides a lot of flexibility with respect to your designs. Processors are available from Freescale using both the former parallel Rapid I.O. spec and the current Serial Rapid I.O. specifications. There are memories from IDT, digital signal processors from Freescale and Texas Instruments, as well as, obviously, switches, Tundra Semiconductor being one of the key vendors. So what's a Rapid I.O. network consist of? It consists of two essential building blocks. These are endpoints and switches. The endpoint source and sync packets. The switches pass packets between ports without interpreting them. So as you can see from this diagram, when you want to pass packets between a number of endpoints, basically a very simple way is using a RapidIO network and using RapidIO switches in between them. Now going to the next slide, this slide talks about the suitability of RapidIO for micro TCA systems. Specifically, the backplane requirements in micro TCA are up to 12.8 gigabits per second. And this diagram shows a relative comparison with respect to how the different protocols fare for transmitting actual data when you strip out header and overhead. And as you can see from this diagram, RapidIO provides scalable bandwidth from 1 to 10 gigabit per second of actual data rate after 8-bit, 10-bit encoding, with 95% efficiency of the protocol. It's really suitable for high bandwidth wireless applications that need up to 10 gigabit per second of connectivity, not just on the backplane, but on chip-to-chip interconnect. And these next generation products are WiMAX, 3G LTE, and other 4G services. As you can see from the diagram, for a 256-byte PDU, RapidIO transmits 9.3 gigabit per second of actual data rate. When you look at the same for gigabit Ethernet, it's down at about 8 gigabit per second. But then when we drop down to 64-byte packets, and I hope this diagram actually comes out better on your view than what I'm seeing here, but when you look at 64-byte packets, what you end up with is 10 gigabit Ethernet only at 3.3 gigabit per second, whereas RapidIO is still transmitting 6.7 gigabits per second. So from a micro TCA perspective, this provides an attractive alternative, and we at Tundra have seen the adoption in backplanes and on line cards at a number of wireless OEMs because of some of these features of RapidIO. Moving to the next slide, Moving to the next slide here, we have an overview of the typical micro TCA architecture. This is actually taken from a PCMIC diagram. And what we're trying to point out here is, where can you use RapidIO? Obviously, you can use it on the AMCs for processor to processor, processor to FPGA, FPGA to switch connectivity. But in addition to that, it's used to connect the AMCs across the backplane. Now we'll go into an actual wireless framework using micro TCA. So in this diagram, there's a few key building blocks. There are the RF cards, a RapidIO-enabled micro TCA carrier hub, a network interface AMC, and a number of baseband AMCs. So the antenna provides the interface to the mobile or fixed subscriber. So that's basically you and me using our cell phones or our other wireless equipment out in the field. We're communicating to a tower, and from the radio head, the data is passed to the RF cards that then digitize this data. That data is then forwarded to the carrier hub, which then multicasts that data to all the baseband cards. All the baseband cards need to see what's coming off the wire simultaneously to extract the user information. And once that's done, the baseband cards then send the extracted data back to the carrier hub, which then forwards it across the network interface to the rest of the network. Now the RF cards, the network interface card, the baseband card, and the micro TCA carrier hub, they all take on an AMC form factor. So this next diagram shows the micro TCA carrier hub conceptual block diagram. So in this diagram, you see essentially two key components. One's the control and the management logic. The other one is the switching functionality. The switch transmits data between AMC cards at up to 10 gigabits per second. Typically, there'll be 12 S3O by 10 links coming off of this micro TCA carrier hub. It, as I mentioned, it provides the control and management infrastructure. And in some cases, since this is a shared resource and a single point of failure, we actually have customers putting in redundant MCHs. Now, in the next slide, we'll get specific to my previous example, which basically takes the data where you have a micro TCA carrier hub, which takes data off the RF cards, combines that data into one stream, and then multicasts it using the switch on the micro TCA carrier hub to the baseband cards. You'll see in this diagram there's a rapid I/O switch for data plane, and then you have an Ethernet switch that actually provides a joint control plane. And as some of you know from the AMC mappings that are available through PCMYC, you can have multiple protocols going across the backplane. And in this diagram, we have a PowerQuick 3 that does some of the management functionality. Moving to the next slide, we show an example of an ATCA carrier WiMAX baseband card. So in this diagram, what you have is a larger card that has an FPGA, a number of DSPs. In this example, I've used three, but you could have more than three depending on the processing needs of your sector and the number of carriers. You have a decentralized control plane capability with the PowerQuick 3, which also can be used to do some of the MAC layer processing. And as you can see from this diagram, you have gigabit Ethernet for control traffic and serial rapid I/O for data plane traffic. This architecture can also be used typically in pizza box applications for Pico or microcell applications. And a cut-down version of this can actually be used to generate line cards, and we'll go into the next example in an AMC form factor. This slide shows an AMC card with three DSPs on it, a rapid I/O switch for data plane, and a gigabit Ethernet switch for control plane. This is actually very similar to a card that Tundra and Freescale recently announced, in which there are four DSPs, a gigabit Ethernet switch, and a rapid I/O switch. So the higher data rates in WiMAX compared to 3G require more backplane bandwidth, and that's where rapid I/O shines. Serial rapid I/O data plane, serial rapid I/O is used to aggregate the DSP data. And the DSPs are fully flexible. Using the rapid I/O protocol, you can allocate, for example, one sector of processing per DSP, or depending on your loading and the number of subscribers in each sector, you can distribute the loading between sectors across multiple DSPs. In this diagram, you actually don't have an FPGA like you did on the ATCA carrier card. The antenna data is terminated in an FPGA that does the OFDM processing on a separate AMC or potentially on a daughter card. In this case, two slots out of your micro TCA backplane may be used. This slide shows an example of what Ericsson has done using ATCA and serial rapid I/O for a wireless baseband system. So the platform serves as the basis for software development of layer 1, layer 2, and eventually layer 3 software functionality in a wireless system. It's based on ATCA, and it leverages rapid I/O between the line cards and on the backplane. This system was announced by Ericsson at 3GSM in February in Barcelona this year. Now, in the second part of this presentation, we'll give you some examples of what's available today in the ecosystem that system OEMs can use quickly to prototype rapid I/O-based systems. So the first example is a micro TCA carrier hub switching module that's available via sublicense from Tundra. This was designed by Ericsson for a micro TCA wireless platform. It supports 12 high bandwidth 10 gig serial rapid IO ports featuring Tundra's TSI 578 switch. One of the biggest benefits here was the high signal integrity of the rapid IO switch across the backplane for the longer length, in addition to the low power, low latency, and multicast features that were available. The next slide is the Tundra TSI 578 and Freescale 8144E AMC, which is targeted at WiMAX 3GLT video and media gateway applications. It's basically a four times multi-core DSP from Freescale aggregated with Tundra's TSI 578 switch for the data plane, as well as a gigabit Ethernet switch for control plane. In addition to the AMC available from Freescale, Mercury also has a WiMAX AMC card that's available today. It uses Tundra's TSI 578 switch, a Xilinx Vertex 4 FPGA, and three TI-6482 DSPs. This system can be used to rapidly prototype WiMAX systems today. And finally, here's another example. This is not specifically related to a wireless base station, but it is an example of an ATCA card that Radisys announced recently that uses the TSI 578 serial rapid IO switch to aggregate up to 20 Freescale MSC 8144 DSPs on two mezzanine cards for media processing applications. So with that, I'll hand off the presentation to Joe. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Dev. Next up, Matt Huber from Embedded Planet is going to talk about using AMCs in ATCA systems for gigabit Ethernet connectivity and also talk some more about rapid IO for DSP interconnects. Matt? Got to unmute, Matt.
Sorry about that. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for everyone for attending. As Joe mentioned, I'm going to run down through some of the solutions that we've been working on with customers related to ATCA modules and some of the additional AMC modules using gigabit Ethernet and serial rapid IO. Next slide here. So just as an agenda for some of the slides, we'll walk through, give you a little overview of Embedded Planet, talk about some of the ATCA AMC modules with related to gigabit Ethernet and rapid IO, media and a networking type application, give some product examples, and summarize some of the tools and common software that exist with the different systems. Just a summary for Embedded Planet. We do a lot of product development for customers. We supply customers with products, so it's kind of a mix of services and product. We do everything from schematic basic review for customers all the way to complete production and product development in the different markets that you see listed there. What we'll talk about here in the presentation, we'll cover typically it's a telecommunications market, but we are working with customers, especially in the military aerospace market, using ATCA, micro TCA, AMC type modules, and taking advantage of CR Rapid IO. Now we also offer training services related to the different products, specifically Rapid IO. The next slide summarizes some of the products that we've talked about or that we've mentioned briefly and how they can be used on an ATCA carrier both for gigabit Ethernet and for CR Rapid IO as the interconnect. What this allows the customer to do is take advantage of serial rapid I.O. modules that are out there in the ecosystem, as well as I.O. modules that may only have a gigabit Ethernet type interface. So this allows them to mix and match the different modules and take advantage of the features that exist inside serial rapid I.O., which are listed at the right there as the interconnect. So control modules, typically the processing type module data, as some of the modules that Dev talked about related to processing the DSPs, and then also finally the I/O modules. And all these can be integrated onto an ATCA type carrier, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So just some of the examples of the applications, a media-based type system. This could be any type of media processing, voice, data, video. And this uses this carrier that's listed here as an example, has the gigabit Ethernet and Sierra RapidIO fabric interface for both the processing modules and the DSP modules. Two of the embedded planar products are listed here, but this could easily be a Radisys or a GE FANUC or any type of product. The key is the modules have the capability to use gigabit Ethernet communication as well as the fabric of Sierra RapidIO, in addition to accessing the what I would call the I/O cards for either T1E1 or RF, as Dev has mentioned. The next application is related to more just packet processing, networking type, but it's a very similar architecture where the capabilities for processing and control are provided by the AMC modules on the carrier. Sierra RapidIO is a good fit for both these applications because it provides fault detection via CRC and encoding and performance and reliability monitoring. It also provides fault isolation and containment. So Sierra RapidIO gives you a lot of performance and management capabilities to move the packet information that you need to from one system to another. And just as an example, once again, this could be any AMC or ATCA type modules. The ATCA carrier provides both Sierra RapidIO and Gigabit Ethernet and can use different AMC modules as a way to build up the system functionality. And these modules, there's vendors, as Dev had mentioned, where they're actually put the processing or DSP functionality directly onto the ATCA blade. So it just depends on the application and the functionality. And we're also working with a customer to take the functionality of the AMC modules and embed that right onto the ATCA carrier blade for their specific application to meet their requirements. So just as an example, the block diagram for the carrier module, you see it has the four AMC sites, gigabit Ethernet switch, the Sierra RapidIO switch, and the management interface for this uses the pigeon point carrier management or ATCA card management software and hardware to provide the interface back into the shelf that the ATCA card would reside in. There's a number of different vendor options that exist for components on this different module. We've used the Tundra 568, and then we're migrating to the 578 switch, as well as the different AMC cards that you can populate. So the example of the Tundra switch, just some of the details related to that module, the amount of bandwidth that this card or this module, this switch can process is the key benefit, because the benefit of Sierra RapidIO can take the data from one either FPGA, DSP, or processor component or module and pass that directly to the other modules. The latency is very low. There's no processing that's provided. It's a pass-through type switch. So there's a lot of performance that's capable there in a very small package. And there's a number of these different types of configurations for ports available and being developed for the future. And the next slide kind of gives a good example of a block diagram for a control processing module, the Embedded Planet 8568 module. And what this allows the customers to do is take advantage of the PowerPC architecture, but also has, you'll see circled in red there in the oval, the SerDes interface to give the fabric out to the AMC connector. And this is the same type of connection that's used, whether it's from a processor to an FPGA, or a processor to a DSP, or between all three and on a single module, or out to the fabric or to the backplane. The next slide summarizes some software that's available for monitoring or doing diagnostics and getting additional information inside the different RapidIO nodes, whether it's a processor or DSP or FPGA or actual card-to-card. The RapidFET product, which is from Fabric Embedded Tools, gives you a graphical interface to edit registers, monitor throughput, do a lot of diagnostics and monitoring of the different RapidIO nodes. And once again, this could be the different components or actual different modules, whether ATCA or micro-TCA or AMC. And there's a significant amount of diagnostics and logging that's available in the software package. So the next slide kind of gives you a, if you can see it on your slide, it gives you a screenshot of the navigation at the left, more like a Windows Explorer type navigation, and then a more of a graphical representation of the network itself. This package allows you to, you know, have an interactive network map, monitor the different errors and performance, access into the registers and configuration information for each node. Once again, whether that node is a DSP or FPGA or an actual card is very critical for managing the different systems, as well as the logging and generating of reports and fault information. So just to kind of summarize on the software side of things, the RapidFET tool is kind of like a diagnostic or monitoring, but any of the software, whether it's module management, RTOS drivers, messaging, all that software that you develop, whether it's inside an ATCA module or on the AMC modules, that software can be moved from one system to another to take advantage of the different architectures, especially on an AMC module, whether it's in a micro-TCA system or in an ATCA-type application. And that's using Linux and or software from Enea or any of the different systems. And I think with that, Joe, I'm going to pass it back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Our last speaker today, Howard Glassman from GE FANUC Embedded Systems, is going to talk about building modular advanced TCA systems using AMC modules. And before I hand it over to Howard, again, I encourage anyone listening to this to type in a question, hit the little pose a question box in the left, lower left part of your screen, and then we'll have should have some time here at the end of the hour to answer the questions. So with that, I'll hand it over to you, Howard.
Thanks, Joe. I want to personally thank everyone attending the session. Today we're going to talk about the whole concept of open modular communication systems, you know, COTS and XTCA systems, a little bit about where they fit in next-generation networks. I'm going to focus on high-performance IP packet processing applications and building blocks to satisfy those types of applications, both in the form of ATCA using a communications blade concept and the evolution to the micro-TCA platform. And then, of course, we'll summarize our thoughts here. Firstly, I'd like to introduce GE FANUC Embedded Systems. I'm sure many of you are familiar with GE, but the Embedded Systems group within GE is a market leader in the embedded computing communications space, offering products for a wide variety of market segments, including defense, mil aerospace, telecom, medical, and the industrial automation markets. We focus on operational excellence and spend a lot of time participating in the standards-based efforts. Two, which are very new and pretty exciting in their role in taking the context TCA market to the next level, are two recent efforts. One, CPTA, which is developing a standard set of testing suites for product interoperability, so you can use different companies' products in the ecosystem, and they will play together in your architecture. And a new initiative around scope, around the next generation telecommunications architecture, where they're developing a set of standard recommendations, so an ecosystem can develop rapidly. And we're participating in both those as well as MicroTCA and a number of the picnic activities. Just to kind of frame the conversation, I mean, there's some key trends that are driving next-generation communication systems, and there's a renaissance, really, of equipment and applications around converging applications for voice and video, and incorporating both standard internet, high-speed internet access, and wireless. And what this really boils down to is that these networks are being developed using next-generation IP communications protocol at the core and at the edge of the network. So it's going to require new devices. It's going to require new capabilities in these devices, and it's going to require that these devices be able to handle multiple gigabit rates of packet processing and analysis. So briefly, as you probably know, if you've had experience with ATCA, this carrier-grade architecture is well-suited for the core of the network, where you need both general-purpose processing capability, network processing capability, and scalable I/O. And now with the ratification MicroTCA, there's now a compact chassis that takes advantage of a lot of the specifications and previous work that was done at PCMIG, and you can use the same modular building blocks to design in both ATCA and MicroTCA. MicroTCA, being a lower cost, smaller footprint, is very well suited to edge and access-oriented applications. So let's talk briefly about the advanced MC module, which is assuming the role as the key modular building block for designing these next-generation XTCA systems. So whether you're using it on a carrier blade in an ATCA system or you're using it plugged directly into a MicroTCA backplane, you have the advantage of using a common building block to design both these systems on. And what it offers you is this whole concept of flexibility of your product portfolio. So you can scale your product portfolio to meet different price points and performance points of the system architecture. And you can do this using ATCA, and one of the key benefits of ATCA is it now has the ability through carriers to house these AMC modules. So you can take a very modular approach to the design, and you can scale performance by adding AMC processing or I/O to these carrier blades. And one of the advantages of the advanced MC or the AMC module is that software reuse. And so once you test and write the drivers and you have the diagnostics and all the management software, you only have to design it once. So when you're designing another system, be it a smaller system based on MicroTCA or a different application target, you don't have to redesign your software. Here's the concept of the ATCA carrier using advanced MCs. This is a 4-bay carrier, and you'll also notice that many of the vendors are now designing AMC sites on their processor boards and on their hub switching modules. So basically, the ability to add incremental processing or I/O to these ATCA blades is now offered by a wide variety of solutions. I'm going to focus on IP packet processing applications, as I mentioned. This is a module which is a multi-gigabit IP packet processing module that can be used for a wide variety of applications, both either in the core or at the edge of the network. This utilizes a best-of-breed, state-of-the-art multi-core silicon from a company called Cavium, called the Octeon. This is scalable anywhere from 4 to 16 cores and is optimized for data plane processing and IP packet processing applications, whether it's flow management, traffic management, or IP security. So where do these types of these IP packet processing applications fit? Well, basically they fit everywhere in the network, whether you're talking about data encryption, enhanced security for content scanning and processing, threat management, traffic management, both for enhanced wireless broadband and wireline broadband schemes, media processing and load balancing, real-time mediation and billing for video content, packet classification, and of course, VoIP security using the SIP protocol. So you can see it fits a wide variety of applications. And why you need a packet processor is the reason is the concept of deep packet analysis, that you're looking at the information in the packet to make decisions on how to do traffic management or how to provide security. So let's talk about an application here utilizing an ATCA blade, which has an advanced MC or an AMC site. This is a session border controller for doing voice over IP security in a carrier-grade network. It utilizes a dual-core Xeon processor for the control plane, and it utilizes a state-of-the-art Cavium Octeon processor for data plane and data plane security. You can then use this same building block to design an IP security application, more of an edge or a gateway or an access appliance, utilizing this same AMC building block. To it, you would add a processor AMC to handle control plane and application traffic, and a storage AMC in order as key building blocks to design your applications. It might be a wireless gateway for managing the access between the cellular network and the IP network. It might be a VoIP border session controller to handle all your voice traffic. It might be a video gateway to handle video security and traffic. This shows you the concept of AMC products with a wide variety of different building blocks, and GFANUC has a broad array of building blocks for designing systems, including processor AMCs, storage AMCs, WAN and LAN, and network processor, and even GPS clock with AMC, which could be used for designing WiMAX base stations. In summary, AMCs have the ability to be used as a key building block along with other key building blocks for designing these applications. Organizations like the Scope Alliance are providing blueprints of what the architectures they would like to see for these AMCs, common architectures that they could use that meets the needs of the telecommunications industry for the next generation equipment. And, of course, AMCs provide ease of upgrade, flexibility, common reuse of drivers, and the ecosystem is growing fairly dramatically. I think at last count there's over 100 AMCs currently have been announced by vendors. I'm going to conclude here and turn it back to Joe. I want to thank everyone for joining.
Okay, thank you, Howard. Good stuff. Again, encourage anyone that has a question for these presenters to go ahead and type it in. We'll look at it. There are some questions here. I kind of want to go through them. Here's a question for Dev at Tundra. You mentioned RapidIO in WiMAX applications. Is that something that's still in the lab, or is that moving out into production?
Thanks for the question. Yes, RapidIO and WiMAX applications are definitely out in production today. They're in a number of deployments in North America and in the Far East, using RapidIO for both DSP aggregation and across backplane for connectivity between AMC cards.
Speaking of WiMAX, what geographies do you see as adopting WiMAX first? You mentioned North America and Asia as well.
Well, I think we're seeing based on spectrum allocation, rollouts throughout the world at this point. Obviously, many of you have seen the announcements here in North America with Sprint spending $4.5 billion in infrastructure rollout for WiMAX. There have been a number of service providers in the Far East who've already started, specifically in Taiwan. And we're starting to see increased traction in Europe and in geographies such as India and Latin America and Africa, where the existing wired infrastructure isn't as prevalent. So it's easier for service providers to make that quantum leap forward to WiMAX and offer those high bandwidth broadband links over the air.
Okay. Dev, here's another question for you. When are switches in silicon and DSPs going to support Serial Rapid I/O version 2?
So just to educate the audience here, Serial Rapid I/O 2.0 is the most recent specification announced by the Rapid I/O Trade Association. The former specification was Serial Rapid I/O 1.3, for which you see silicon from Tundra, Freescale, TI, and a variety of FPGA vendors. RapidIO 2.0 will have a number of new features beyond RapidIO 1.3, but I guess for the purpose of our audience, one of the biggest features, obviously, is the higher speed per lane, where RapidIO 1.3 tops out at 3.125 gigabaud. RapidIO 2.0 will go up to 6.25. And lane configurations can range from by 1 up to by 16. So this gets you up to 80 gigabit per second between endpoints or across the backplane using 2.0. Specifically, when will the silicon be available? Most of the current members of the RapidIO Trade Association, the semiconductor vendors who offer product today, will be offering product in the near term based on 2.0. Tundra is actively working with its partners to implement that subset of 2.0 features that we believe will offer the most benefit to our customers in the market. Keep in mind that there are many mandatory and many optional features in the 2.0 specification. So the good news is the members of the RapidIO Trade Association are fairly cooperative, and we're working together to bring to the market a set of features that we believe will system OEMs will be able to leverage for the performance requirements in the next few years.
Here's a question for you, Matt. At Embedded Planet, what RTOS support exists for Serial Rapid I/O on some of the products you talked about?
Thanks, Joe. We've got on Linux. This would be a standard GPL Linux. It's not tied to a specific vendor. And then Wind River's VxWorks also supports the Serial Rapid I/O on the number of the processors that we have. And I know some of the other, you know, RTOS vendors are developing or may already have products, but the Linux and the VxWorks are two pieces that we know we've used and customers are using today.
Okay. Here's a question that came in. I think I can go ahead and answer. Someone wants to know when the presentations are going to be available, and yes, they will be archived and should be available within 24 hours. There will be a URL slide I'll bring up here after the Q&A session that will show you how you can download the slides and listen to the presentation again. Here's a question for Howard at GE. Is the packet processor, the Cavium packet processor you talked about in your presentation, at a 1 gig rate or a 10 gig rate?
This AMC was our first that has come out the door. This has 4 gigabits full duplex, and it's I think that's kind of the state of the art right now on an AMC for Cavium and Octeon packet processing. The next version of the card will support 10 gigabit Zowie capabilities in full duplex mode.
Okay, good. Here's a question for Matt at Embedded Planet. I'm not sure quite what the person's asking, but he's asking, how is interoperability tested?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. The typically, one of the questions that we get a lot is, my guess is all the modules, how does everything plug together, and how is that actually tested, or is it up to the customer to test it? There's a number of interoperability labs. There was just one back in June. There's other ones scheduled this year that the vendors, you know, GE Fanuc, Radisys, all the different vendors get together and actually do interoperability testing. So what happens is the different vendors plug their modules into other modules, AMC cards and ATCA carriers, that type of thing. So there's a lot of that that has been done, you know, over the last number of even years, I would say, on the ATCA side, and a lot of that now is migrating into the AMC and micro TCA side. So there is a lot of testing that is done for the different modules.
Yeah, I'll let the audience know. PICMIC sponsors these plugfests or interoperability workshops is their formal name, and we've been doing so for Advanced TCA since 2004. I think we've held 17 of them so far. We've done, of course, Advanced TCA through AMCs and now micro TCA. There's another organization that was mentioned, CPTA, the Communications Platform Trade Association, and they've basically come into existence to work on the interoperability issue from a little higher level and define some tests, some standardized tests that can be used to test specific configurations of ATCA systems. And AMCs, I don't think they've quite tackled micro TCA yet, but CPTA is very actively involved in the creation of test suites, and they are hoping to actually do interoperability testing and hire a test lab later this year to do that. So there's a lot of activity going on in interoperability because these are very complex systems and got to put them together right. Let's see. Here's another question that came in. Someone wanted to know sources for micro TCA enclosures and backplanes. Certainly the people you've heard on this talk today, I would encourage you, if you don't already subscribe to Open Systems Publishing's Compact PCI Systems, Advanced TCA Systems magazine. That's always a great source of articles and advertisers to say who's building what. There are some people are doing complete systems, some people are doing backplanes, some people are doing chassis. And at the recent Micro TCA Summit that was held in Baltimore here a couple of months ago, I think there were about 50 vendors there showing Micro TCA products. So you might want to look into the archives of the Micro TCA Summit and see some of the things that were discussed there. Here's an interesting one for you, Dev. You mentioned Serial Rapid I.O. as a chassis-to-chassis interconnect. Just how far can you transmit Rapid I.O. packets at 10 gigabits per second without major signal-to-noise issues?
That's a great question, actually. So the Rapid I.O. specification calls for, I believe, 80 to 100 centimeter reach across two connectors. We have had a number of tests done to see how far we could drive the Rapid I.O. signal using our chips. We've done up to 10 meter in our lab at 3.125 gigabaud. And unfortunately, in this presentation, I don't have a picture of the eye diagram, but we actually transmitted with a clean eye diagram using some transmit pre-emphasis capabilities in our RapidIO 1.2 silicon. Now, in our 1.3 silicon, you also have receive equalization. So across the transmission line where you have typically the high-frequency harmonics are the first ones that are attenuated, like in any RF system. This can be partially overcome by increasing the drive of the current. But what does that do? That basically drives up the amplitude of all harmonics, including the noise floor. So what you really want to do is drive up the magnitude at transmit of the high-frequency harmonics. These high-frequency harmonics are also typically phase-shifted across the transmission line. So with receive equalization, once you pick up the signal at the far end, you can actually pump up the high-frequency harmonics and bring them back up to where you need them to be to see a clean signal. But you also end up adding an imaginary component, using a mathematical term, to phase shift that high-frequency signal back to where it should have originally been, thereby reconstructing your originally transmitted signal and creating a clean eye diagram with a really low noise floor. And we've done that up to 10 meters in our lab. There are also products available today, an example of which is an optical transceiver unit from Xilinx Semiconductor, which takes the electrical of serial rapid I.O., converts it into optical, transmits it up to 100 meters across an optical link, and then picks it up at the other end, so you have another one of these transceivers at the other end that puts it back into electrical. So you're actually able to transmit serial rapid I.O. at a fairly significant distance that way. Now keep in mind, when you do try to use rapid I.O. over these extremely long reaches, like 100 meters, you do have to keep in mind the fact that the receiving end actually had to send an acknowledgement of the transmitted when it receives a transmitted packet. And this has to be accounted for in the system design. So in practical cases, you would not use rapid I.O. for transmitting beyond your local space, like in a central office or something like that. Over hundreds of meters, you have to do some smart systems engineering to make sure that that you're still keeping everything all synchronized.
Sort of a related question that came in is what's the power consumption of a serial rapid I/O link? Is it compared to Ethernet, for example?
So I can specifically speak for our switches. So at 1 gigabit per second of data rate, so that corresponds to a buy one link at 1.25 gigabaud, what you're looking at is typically at 120 to 200 milliwatts per port. When you get up to 10 gigabit per second, which corresponds to a buy four link at 3.125 gigabaud, you're looking at it in the range of 400 to 600 milliwatts per port. Which is actually fair when you look at it on a per bit basis compared to Ethernet. We're looking at 20 to 10% for actual payload transmitted data compared to some 10 gigabit Ethernet options.
Okay, thanks. Here's a question that came up for Matt. What bridges and crossbars does the RapidFET development environment support? Matt, you may be on mute.
Yep, sorry, second time I've done that. There's a number of the, I know it's the Tundra and the IDT devices. I'd have to look on the specific on their the RapidFET or the Fabric Embedded Tools website to get all the devices. But I know it's the, from a switch standpoint, it's the Tundra and the IDT devices.
Okay, thank you. Here's a question that I'll just throw out for the group, and maybe you can all comment on it. What's the status of middleware development for advanced TCA and micro TCA-based carrier-grade solutions?
Oh, I can talk to that, Joe. This is Howard. What we are seeing is that a number of the middleware vendors have actively participated in the SA Forum, which is a standards-based organization for standardizing software, similar to some of the activities that are going on the hardware side with organizations like PICMIG and the Scope Alliance. And there's two interfaces that have gotten defined, one on the more from a hardware availability level, a lower interface called OpenHPI, and another one at the application layer called OpenAIS. And what we're finding in our discussions is that these vendors are aggressively supporting these open interfaces today. So one vendor that we just spoke to basically has already tested and deployed on the ATCA side using OpenHPI and was inquiring whether the MCH today had the ability to support the OpenHPI interface, because if that was the case, they could just basically bring their software right over with no changes. So we're pretty excited with what we're seeing initially because of some of these efforts from organizations like the SA Forum and these open interfaces that are created, which allow these software vendors to bring over their applications very quickly.
Yeah, I would add that anyone wanting to learn more about SA Forum, their website is www.saforum.org. Anybody else want to comment on that, or should we go on to another question? Here's one specifically asking about it at MicroTCA. Can the backplane be Ethernet to every AMC in a MicroTCA system? I think the answer is yes, but does anyone have any comment on that?
That might actually be a good question for Joe. However, depending on what AMCs you use and how the backplane's designed, it can be Ethernet going to every AMC, or it can be PCI Express Rapid I/O.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. I think the market will have to sort out.
Yeah, Joe, an interesting
application.
This is Howard. An interesting, just quick point on that side is, I guess the Scope Alliance has put forward an AMC gap analysis, which stated that they would like to see PCI Express as point-to-point connections, and
yeah,
that the fabric of choice or the preferred fabric would be, of course, Ethernet or 10 gigabit Ethernet or serial rapid I/O. Up in the fabric port regions, and that PCI Express, of course, would be preserved as in those regions, but the backplanes would support them for point-to-point connections.
Right. For those of you listening who aren't aware, there's a group called Scope, which consists of a bunch of the major telcos globally who have gotten together and are defining some preferred configurations or profiles for developing for advanced TCA systems that they see is hitting sweet spot application spots in the very large multi-billion-dollar, tens of billions of dollars telco market. And I think their website is Scope Alliance or scope-alliance.org, and you can see they've published everything they've created is put in the public domain. They have in fact made some suggestions for preferred mappings for Ethernet AMCs, and I've just now come out with some suggestions for serial rapid I/O AMCs. And while we're talking about serial rapid I/O, I'd let everybody know that the PCMIG AMC specification that defines serial rapid I/O is the AMC.4 specification. It's one of the dot specs, and that's complete, just going through the ratification process as we speak, and should be published here within the next month or so. So you can find more about that on the PCMIG website. So let's just see. I think that pretty much wraps up the questions for today, and we're right at the top of the hour. Sometimes things work out the way they're supposed to. I'd like to remind everyone that, first of all, thank everyone for sitting through this presentation and coming up with some good questions for the speakers. The archive should be published within the next 24 hours at the address you see on your screen. It's opensystems-publishing.com/ecast. If you've got any suggestions for future ecasts or things that you think would make these ecasts better in the future for you or your colleagues, please send an email to ecast@opensystemspublishing.com. So with that, I'd like to wrap up this presentation today. We've just taken just the allotted hour. I certainly want to thank Dev and Matt and Howard for their great presentations and their willingness to answer some tough questions. And I want to thank, of course, the audience for spending this time with us. So with that, we'll wrap up today's ECAST, and we look forward to seeing you at the next one. Thank you.